Hello, and welcome to Databook, a podcast presented by Chief Healthcare Executive. I'm Ron Southwick, Senior Editor of Chief Healthcare Executive. With Databook, we talk to healthcare leaders about technology, innovation, and the transformation of healthcare. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll get started in just a moment. In this episode, we talk with James Quarles, a venture chair for Redesign Health, a firm which launches healthcare technology startup companies. The former CEO of Strava, he talks about how Redesign Health chooses which companies to back, he discusses the ingredients of successful startups, and he outlines some mistakes to avoid. It's a great conversation, so please join us. So thanks for joining us today. We are talking with James Quarles of Redesign Health. James, thanks so much for taking some time to talk with us today.
Really pleasure to be here and to meet you, man.
Well, I'm really fascinated with what you do, and Redesign Health has obviously launched a number of startups. Talk to me just about how you got into starting up healthcare companies and sort of what drew you to that.
Yeah, so it's fun to be on a healthcare executive podcast when I've got such a background in technology. So my start really has been on both the enterprise side of technology as well as in consumer tech. My wife and I had the pleasure of living in London for 10 years, and I got to work all across Europe. But the time I spent in the UK, I actually did spend in public sector, working with local governments, you know, deploying digital solutions in the classrooms, research computing, but also in a healthcare environment there. We did things like clinical archiving for hospitals. So that was pretty fun. I subsequently worked in social media. So I had jobs at Facebook and Instagram, both internationally and domestically, helping small businesses, and built the business of Instagram with the founder. So that was a really nice startup experience. I had a lot of exposure to startups there. And then my most recent role prior to Redesign was as CEO of Strava. And I don't know how many of your listeners know what Strava is, but for those who run and cycle and swim or just work out generally, it's a social network for athletes. And so we help people stay motivated through the power of community. And so that was just a very neat place to learn about digital wellness and motivation. And so that's, I think, you know, a little bit of my entry into Redesign. But I would not say that I was looking for a healthcare role specifically. I just was attracted to, I think, the idea of this company and the opportunity in my current job as venture chair to go to startup school, to participate so early in the ideation and formation and team founding of companies that it was just immensely attractive. So that's what brought me to Redesign about 2.5 years ago. And I'm happy to tell you more about Redesign, because I also think not widely understood as to what Redesign does.
Well, I do want to ask about Redesign, but I just know so many of our audience uses Strava for
okay.
running. And so I just wonder, what are the lessons from Strava that are helping you in your current role?
Well, I think, you know, look, healthcare has a lot of costs that are driven by behavior. And so whether it's musculoskeletal and, you know, the obesity problems or things around mental health, you know, behavior change is really important to make people healthier. And so I think seeing a community where people declare a goal publicly and then have those around them hold them accountable and help them achieve it was really, I think, one thing that was pretty remarkable to see in Strava's case. So that's very relevant today as we try and build with the health systems and with payers to try and think about how could we address these costs and what role does technology play. I think the second thing is just, you know, for the startup lessons, I think there are a lot of startup lessons about just building product and focusing on a pretty narrow community, delighting them and moving outwards. Healthcare is obviously massive. And I always try with our founders to define as small a problem as possible to start with and not get overcomplicated in the early days. So Strava, as you know, started just with male competitive cyclists. We call them mammals, middle-aged men in Lycra, which, you know, is all that that company wanted to serve from the outset. And so I think that there's a lot of analogs there of just focus and simplifying in the early stages, because if you bite off too much, you know, I always say startups die actually of indigestion, not starvation. So narrow focus has been a second thing I've carried across.
Now, Redesign Health is launched how many startups at this point? It's dozens at this point, isn't it?
It's actually 50. We've launched 50, 50 companies in our 5 years of existence. So the company was born in 2018, and this year we announced our 50th launch of a company.
How do you decide this is an idea that's got potential, this is a market that's underserved? What's the process we go through? This is something we're getting behind.
Yeah, great question. When you get it often. So firstly, for those who don't know what Redesign is, you know, we build healthcare companies. That is what we're in the business of doing. And we don't do devices. We don't do molecules. I think everything that's in the middle of enabling clinicians, payer provider, tech-enabled services, that's where those 50 businesses largely lie. To your question about how we go through the ideation space, look, Ron, if you and I were to start a company ourselves, the typical path for founders is to address a space that you know well with a person that you know well, with probably an entry point that you know well. What you don't have a lot of time or resource to do is research pain points, unit economics, and business potential and alignment of incentives that Redesign can do. We spend somewhere between 4 to 6 months vetting these ideas through expert interviews, first party research, you know, a lot of modeling of the market to make sure that there's a business there. Because there's some big protracted costs and challenges in healthcare that many businesses have struggled to make great business models of. So we do a lot of desk side research. And then my role, so venture chairs, have backgrounds a lot like me. I have 11 peers who have worked in executive positions around healthcare. And we try and ask the critical funding questions of those businesses to just say, what's going to make this succeed or fail based on our experience? Sometimes it's product and service offering. Sometimes it's economics. Sometimes it's the selling motion. But we really stress test that together to just feel like, okay, we feel enough conviction in this idea, but we don't belabor it. I think this is what one of the learnings in our 5 years is, you know, we're not going to get to perfection on an answer in the theoretical. We have to put a team in place who are much more expert than we are and enable them to go out and try and work with customers and solve those problems that we early identified. So it's this art, honestly, combined with the science of trying to figure out when do we have enough signal to say it's a big market and we think we can make a difference to it. And then now let's put a team in place to actually go try and find where the opportunity is, because that's often not exactly where we started thinking it might be.
At some conferences I've been at over the last year, heard some startups or some younger companies talk about the more challenging environment it is to get funding, whereas like a couple years ago, it was pretty easy, and now it's really swung the other way. Is that what you're finding? Do you see any change in that environment coming?
Yes, that is absolutely what we're finding. And for a little context, I mean, it just feels cyclical to me, somebody who's been through the 2000, 2008, you know, market corrections. You know, in 2021, I think post-pandemic, there were a lot of investors and companies who believed that much of the patient or maybe even provider behavior change was sticky, would continue for decades. And so the investment that came into technology generally and healthcare specifically was unprecedented, right? Came out of a lot of bond markets in places where there wasn't a lot of return. And so 2021, I think, was at the aberration. It was such an unbelievable amount of money into health tech. 22 and 23 have been corrections to much more normal levels of what I would have expected in 2017 and 2018 in raising money. There's an expectation for traction and an expectation for valuations that feel much more sensible. So I would say that there is an investment environment. There's a lot. I mean, we haven't changed our pace, certainly, of launching companies, but I just think the bar for traction is a lot higher, and it should be. It should be to really stress test these companies. I think where some of the pain is still to be experienced is both for investors and for some of those companies who were gifted with those valuations that were well ahead of maybe their own traction. They've got to get repriced. They have to be priced back to where the public market is and where private markets is. And that can be very hard because, you know, new investors want current pricing terms, but existing investors obviously want to get a return on their investment. So I think that's some of what still is working out right now. So for us who are out, you know, supporting these companies trying to fundraise, you see a number of firms who are taking meetings, investment firms, but they're not writing checks still because they're trying to shore up the existing portfolio companies that they have. And they're also trying to be very judicious in where they spend money on businesses that may or may not, you know, have cleared enough of a hurdle.
Well, you mentioned that you're still keeping your current pace of launching companies. I guess one of those recently launched companies is Fort Health, which is focusing on mental health for younger people. I was wondering if you could talk more about that, because that seems to be an area of a growing concern in the healthcare industry, the mental health crisis among youth.
Yeah, it sure is. So this is one of my children, and I love all of my children equally. I have three actual children, and as I said, about seven companies I've helped with the launch of. So Fort Health is our, yes, pediatric mental health solution built in partnership with the Child Mind Institute. Obviously, rates of depression and anxiety and teen suicide were bad pre-pandemic. All of us have seen the statistics just about how scary that isolation, social isolation has been, particularly on young girls. And so what we wanted to do, there aren't many clinicians across the country who treat adolescents. There are even fewer psychiatrists who train for, evidence-based practice of treating kids. And so in partnership with the Child Mind Institute, it's been great for us to build a network of clinicians who can be seen by both the kids themselves and their parents. So we have a whole family model, and we're helping them through mild to moderate anxiety, depression, mood and behavior disorders. And what we find is that with several sessions, we're able to get these kids back and functioning and return to their normal lives. So we can get to outcomes. There's very proven support through early intervention. And what's nice, I think, post-pandemic, the power of telehealth plus reimbursement now. You see a lot of the payers come forward and saying, look, we recognize that this is a real crisis we have to address early. The earlier we address it, obviously the lower the cost of care is. And so we've got an in-network. We're in-network in the state of New Jersey and in the state of New York with these clinicians. So it's on your commercial insurance. It's got the standards of CMI standing behind it, and the clinical methods that we train our providers in. And you can actually get an appointment. I mean, most pediatricians have 40% of their waiting room is with families who are in crisis, and they have no place to refer them. So that's where Fort comes in. We're just very, very excited with, growing that business, as I said, in New Jersey and New York, and then extending it across the country. And I think it's very representative of how Redesign works. Take an idea, find a strong anchor partner, hire an exceptional founding team, and Natalie Schneider and her and the rest of her staff, and then slowly help them scale up and out across the nation.
You mentioned being in New York and New Jersey, but obviously wanting to go beyond that. Is there any sort of timetable we have when you can expand to other states and be actually more available nationwide?
Good question. I think we have many businesses where they're marketplaces, meaning you've got, in this case, in Fort's case, you have a supply of clinicians and you have a supply or a demand from patients. And what we find in those businesses is it's most effective to really keep them concentrated geographically and to get through these dynamics of working and finding strong referring health systems and having a large network of clinical supply to be able to deliver upon. So we really try and work to stay tightly focused, as well making sure we've got full insurance coverage before we move to another market. So I would say, probably in the next year, Fort is starting to look at other markets. If you look at Uplift and Kins, which are two other behavioral health companies behavioral health and Uplift's case for adults, and Kins is a physical therapy business, they follow the same path of going from two markets to five markets to 10 markets, and just making sure at every step we have a playbook in place to make sure that there's a density. We want to make sure, Ron, if you were to ask for service, that we're available in your area. There aren't long wait lines. We can process reimbursement on those things. And that, really does progress state by state.
When you said people go for health can actually get appointments, I'm sure that would perk up the ears of some folks who have had trouble finding appointments elsewhere. So what's the, I guess, the secret making sure you actually have people available that are available to serve patients?
Yeah, it's a real focus on hiring and training. It's finding alternate models where we can make sure the hours are available. Kids are in school, except for in the summer, right, till 3 o'clock. So it's finding some flexibility in how we make those hours available. And then it's not getting, I think, too far ahead of ourselves on the demand side where we had too much pediatrician inbound where it overwhelmed us. I think there's a real care in making sure that as we're expanding our partnerships and expanding the demand from patients, that we're able to fulfill it. And we watch wait times. I mean, we want to make sure that we can get somebody in for a diagnostic within 48 hours of being introduced to us. So I think it's very, very important to ensure we've got that capacity before we get too carried away with demand. And as you said, I think that the demand here is pretty enormous.
I'm sure this is a question you get from time to time, but I think a lot of our audience would enjoy your perspective. What's some of the advice that you would offer to people looking to go forward with an idea they have for a startup?
Yeah, so I have a lot of friends. I really love seeing that in this time, people aren't discouraged from starting new businesses. And I think, in this environment, I'm saying the same thing as I've always said. But number one, I think it really is fun and to build a culture of scrappiness from the beginning, right? To not hire someone or start to build and invest in a big product deployment before you actually know that you have something. So I love telling people, told two people last week this, to just try things on existing tech. Create a WhatsApp group, use pen and paper, have people do journaling, and make sure that this product market fit and this need that you think you've identified is something that you can actually directly solve. So that's one thing. It's just obviously scrappiness, but the expenses, I think there's a real way to be judicious about expenses and not hire a salesperson before you understand and you've tried it yourself. Go out and meet those customers and see how they're doing. I think the second thing that I've seen, and that's really important in this time frame, is product market fit doesn't hide. It's not, and when we say product market fit, for maybe that feels like a Silicon Valley term, but it just means that you get a signal that people have tremendous demand and excitement, enthusiasm about what you're selling them. It doesn't hide. And so if you don't have it, you've got to look for adjacencies. We have some great businesses that I think have invested early in product, but only a portion of it has really found appeal. So I think staying small and building around where you just have like very bright lights versus trying to continue to push your own perception of what this experience should be is a good thing. And then the last thing, very healthcare related, I think there's great problems to solve with incumbents who just are in the system. Big health systems have lots of problems and challenges. Big payers have large challenges. And so, for as much as there's this concept of disrupting the system, I think we all like to build with the system and not try and disrupt it, because there's a lot of challenges, particularly, time and workflows for these clinicians who are seeing patients every day that we should work with and try and solve. One of my favorite businesses, I don't have favorites, but a business that we're working on right now, in the oncology space, is trying to help community oncologists who see 30 patients a day of all tumor types get their questions answered on complex cases. When someone doesn't respond to first or second line treatment, you really go into the space where there's just no resources for you. And typically what they'll do is pick up their phone and phone a friend. They'll call and do a curbside consult with an expert. And so what we've done with Premium, Premium's another business I work with, is to get them a response to their question in well under 24 hours, sometimes in 2 to 4 hours. And it's very specific physician to physician interactions that we enable. And so this is, at point of care, trying to help and speed decision-making. I think when you see just how challenging it is to be an oncologist, to be in the community, and have to keep track of all of these new therapies that exist across all of these different cancer types, why not call and ask an expert in just multiple myeloma as an example? And so that's what Premium has enabled. And so I think we're just, squarely in the space of trying to figure out how we can do more and make those oncologists make better prescribing decisions every single day.
As we were talking about Fort Health earlier, it reminded me of some perspective I heard at a couple of the other conferences that there's sometimes a perception that there's not enough investment in digital health options for young people, for kids. And that was even hearing some people say, if you're trying to start a startup, that might be an area you might find less robust competition. Would that be your perspective as well? That's an area of digital health that there's more room for investment?
Certainly. I think we have seen, I mean, just the amount of challenge around pediatric mental health is a great business opportunity. And I think, as you say, going someplace where there's not huge competition matters, also partnering with someone who has expertise in the space, right? But there are, I mean, as I look across, you know, our businesses we recently launched, that's one where I think, you know, there's challenges and opportunities directly out of the pandemic. I think there's also, you know, if you look at the other end of the spectrum, there's as much opportunity, I believe, in senior care, particularly with caregivers, you know, the children of seniors trying to navigate the decisions around which Medicare plan or health plan they need, and then of all those associated services that can, they can help the elder, but they also, more importantly, make the caregiver's life a lot easier. So I was at a conference last week on longevity here in San Francisco, and I think that that is a just as big an opportunity, not just end of life care, but to really think about how we provide tools for caregivers, because it still is falling on the shoulders of children today. And you know, I think there's a lot of great businesses there. One that I work with is squarely in that space of Medicare plan selection. It's called Keen. But you can't believe how many benefits people have access to that they don't take advantage of. And we spend the time after people enroll in a plan to make sure that they're taking advantage of those benefits.
I think you've already offered some really good perspectives for those people looking to get a startup launched or getting their young company to grow. What are the biggest or most common mistakes you see early in a company's ventures? Is it not thinking through the business plan, or trying to do too much too fast? What are the common mistakes that you see?
I think one consistently is not matching their traction with their burn rate or their expense line. So oftentimes, you know, it's easy to get excited when you start a company to think back when you had a built out executive team and, oh, I need a head of marketing, I need a head of sales, I need a head of clinical. And all of a sudden you have a huge amount of cost in a business before you've actually gotten out to market. So that's a big mistake I see consistently. Number two is I think people spend way too much money early on product that doesn't scale. And so that's, you know, when you have finite resources and you put a lot into some sort of technology solution, I think that can be very expensive. I think a third area is people don't invest enough in advisors. And this is a place where I think Redesign is very adamant as we launch businesses and we put a founding team in place is to surround them with experts in all the different topics they might face. There's clinical topics, there's patient topics, there's obviously the whole selling motion. And in healthcare, you know, I'm just always impressed and appreciative of how willing people are to give their time to support these businesses with advice. And so we create medical advisory boards, clinical advisory boards, commercial advisory boards for all these companies. And those are some of the most powerful ways to get real feedback and strategy of how to move forward. So that's probably a mistake, is not reaching out broadly enough on your network. And then the last area, you know, is just on hiring. I mean, we all make hiring mistakes. It's you know, there's only so much you can assess. But I think in Redesign's time, you know, we have really come to the conclusion that domain expertise probably isn't as important as just adaptability and resilience and this 0-to-1 mindset. People who can be really obsessed with the problems they're trying to solve, create focus and decisiveness on what the one thing is, not the 15 things you're doing, but the one thing, and then have this vision that's magnetic and have the ability as a CEO to attract other talent and capital. Those are the things that we really ultimately interview for. Of course, it's helpful to know value-based care and a lot of, you know, these topics where we launch businesses are very, very specific, but we look for that 0-to-1 skill set. And I think founders and other startups absolutely need to do the same for those first 2 years at a minimum. That's the type of people that thrive in these companies.
It's funny, we're talking to an audience of hospital healthcare leaders, and the hospital industry has often been, you know, criticized for not investing enough in technology and lagging behind other industries in their investments. What advice would you like hospitals, healthcare leaders to think about as they now find themselves in a position where they have to invest more in technology just because they don't have the staff available to do some of the jobs they had 10 years ago?
Yeah, it's such a great question. because, you know, my brother-in-law runs a large system. And so I talk to him often about this topic. You know, I think IT departments have been historically in hospital settings viewed as trying to put a lot of technology into people's hands, presuming that just by having an iPad or having the wheeled cart, that it's going to create a different paradigm for patient care. And I think they've been, you know, hits and misses, right? It's been a lot of hits and misses as far as how much people feel just attached to the EMR, right? They're just almost have a brain to screen connection to the EMR all day. And that hasn't probably led to the best care. You know, I think there are a lot of partners in this space is the first thing I would say. People who have an interest in not over designing, but you know, just thinking about time savings and enablement of decision making versus tech is the answer. I think when the technology is integrated into a service or a solution versus it is just more hardware for hardware's sake that you have to manage, I think it goes better. But I think the other thing that's very real now is just all these point solutions, right? Everybody is facing point solution after point solution after point solution. And you could say, hey, redesign, aren't your 50 companies point solutions? And in some respects they are, but what we've done, you know, we have a number of businesses. I'll give you an example. One's called Iron Health that's trying to wrap OB-GYNs with a whole care support service for mental health of the patients, for you know, their ongoing treatment. If they have specialized needs, that obstetrician can immediately refer. So it's, I think the specialization around a practice and getting more Caroline specific is probably some of the best tech that we have built recently. And so, yes, you know, large language models, I've heard on your program, and there's always AI and new technology coming. I just think the more that it's use case led, like very specific use case led, I think the there's less risk of over designing it and having, you know, unneeded expenditure.
Well, we've really rapidly kind of used up our window here. Is there anything we haven't touched on yet about Redesign Health or some of the other ventures you're behind that you'd like our audience to know about that we haven't touched on yet?
Well, I certainly, you know, I think Redesign's impact. We're looking at, you know, how can we launch more businesses that address access, quality, equity, you know, and so. I think the power of partnering. We have several businesses that have been launched with large partners. UPMC, March of Dimes have worked with us from the very, very beginning on some of these concepts. And then we've built the pilots and proof of concepts together, and those have led to more systems and more traction. So I just, you know, encourage all of your listeners and all of our partners just to know that, you know, we're very, very interested in working with them on their problems and on the opportunities that their clinicians see. And I think those have created some of the best business ideas is when we've been in the room together trying to say, okay, well, you know, how and what would you prioritize from this list of problem set? And then, you know, how closely do our solutions fall? And then can we work together to launch businesses? I like that model a lot versus trying to be from, you know, the outside, trying to have all of these proof of concepts and pilots running that don't necessarily get the resourcing and attention that they need across the system.
Very good. Well, this has really been a fascinating conversation. So, and I think a lot of our audience is going to really enjoy and get a lot out of it. So James, thanks so much for taking the time to talk with us this afternoon. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, my pleasure, Ron. Enjoyed it as well.
Thank you for joining Databook, a podcast presented by Chief Healthcare Executive, a brand of MJH Life Sciences. You can subscribe on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. For the latest news, analysis, and insights on healthcare, visit our website, chiefhealthcareexecutive.com. You can follow us on social media on LinkedIn and Twitter. I'm Ron Southwick, Senior Editor of Chief Healthcare Executive. Thanks again for joining us. Take care.